everyone. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Back on here, WBAI 99.5 FM. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Many, many thanks to all of you who contributed during the marathon. Our success bespeaks your dedication and your love. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to see so much support coming in to the station. I've been able to gather while we've been preempted for some special programming, some very good friends. And I have in the studio with me today two kind of wonderful people. Cynthia Levchenko. Cynthia, welcome to BAI. You're back here, huh?
I am really happy to be back.
Isn't it happy to be here? Yes. I haven't seen you in a couple of years, and this is great.
It is great. Thank you for having me.
And Catherine Altieri, who just recently joined our staff. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Armand. This is a really exciting show for me today because it's a subject that's really near and dear to my heart.
Subject. What is this possible subject we're talking about? Today we're talking about generational differences. I'm talking about generational differences, and we're going to be very specific about that. But part of why Cynthia is with me today is because Cynthia, both Cynthia and Catherine, specialize in helping families relate to each other better. And what Cynthia's idea is that the reason that the people can't relate to each other is because of very generational-specific phenomena that happen. She says, you know, there are generations, there are baby boomers, and there are others, and their concept, their framework is so different that it's almost, it makes it almost impossible to hear people talk. So with that in mind, I'm going to introduce one specific generation that we're going to talk about. I've asked Cynthia to focus on one called the Generation Jones. Have you heard of the Generation Jones, my friends? Well, get ready, because Obama is part of Generation Jones. Almost every new politician is part of Generation Jones. Baby boomers, you've kind of made it. You're kind of passing out. Baby boomers now represent 15% of our population. The mature generation, which they call the mature generation, which is before the baby boomers, 66 years old and older, 68 years old and older, those are 18% of the population. So there are as many older people as there are baby boomers, right? Which means people born during the Second World War. Or thereabouts. And then comes this next generation called, they used to call it Generation X, but it's not, it's broken down. Generation Jones. Generation Jones are people who are 40 to 53 years old. They represent 28% of our population. Generation X, which we'll also talk about, represents 21%, and Generation Y is 20%. But the biggest number of people out there are Jonesies. What is a Generation Jones? What does it mean? How does it bring you about? That's what I want to ask my two guests about. Cynthia, let's start with you. What is Generation Jones?
Generation Jones is a generation that was often referred to as the tail end of baby boomers. Sometimes it was referred to as the beginning of Gen Xers. I am a Joneser, and I never related to either. I'd say in the past 7 years, the term Generation Jones has come about. And it seems to me that when I think about my childhood in the 60s, I was influenced by the 60s, but I was a child. I wasn't going to go to Vietnam. I wasn't going to go marching for civil rights. But yet there I was, you know, with my older cousins and listening to all the music and being influenced as a child during these very turbulent and exciting times.
Now I've spoken to a lot of people recently who have come in to see me, and they say my family were hippies. You know, my family were long hairs. And I think about that, and I was saying, gee, I didn't even know they were having families. But, of course, they did have families. Here we are with a Woodstock revival about to happen, you know, and these young people are different than the people who were. the 60s generation, and there's a big difference. So as you're in your young years, you are looking at a world of what? Free sexuality, right?
Right.
Probably the freest time in history.
Right. I recall, I didn't know what it was at the time, but I remember the smell of reefer as a child from coming from the bedroom of my older cousin. The music in Agata Davida, Steppenwolf, all of that new music to me. I was raised with show tunes, which are lovely, but when I first got to hear this music, I was actually speaking to my cousin recently, and she said I was mesmerized. I would just sit there, and I just absorbed it all.
You mean there was a new music that came about that was meant and targeted your generation? Now, Catherine, you're of the same generation, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I want to say that it's not just a type of music, but what I felt in that period of time was that there was a wealth of diversity in music and in pop culture. We had all kinds of things, not just rock and roll, but we also had this pop music, like the Monkees and the Beatles, the soft rock.
Yeah, the folk music.
The folk music,
Simon
too.
And Garfunkel.
Right, there was this great diversity in music and in television.
Okay, wait. That's not telling us anything, no. Yes, there is a diversity of music, but it's not just the music we're talking about. Something happened in this generation that we have to pay attention to. They have different ethics. What are the ethics of the Generation Jones, as it's called, that are different? Are they more noble or less noble? Are they more dedicated or less dedicated?
It's been referred to as a more practical idealism. Boomers, very idealistic, expected a lot, received quite a bit. Jonesers came along and had that affect them, but then things didn't work out exactly as things were planned. So there's a more pragmatic way. And again, Obama's probably a really good example. He's very idealistic, but he's very, very practical. And he knows he needs to do whatever has to be done. And whatever has to happen, he will do.
So there's something about the fact that the Jones people have more of a sense of practicality than just pure integrity. They're kind of like, and this is kind of probably why our banking industry was built probably on Jonesers. You know, we have those traders who are doing all the trading manipulations and all that stuff. Young people saying, you know, well, how do we make this work? How do we make it work? Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, you know, those are certainly Jonesers as well. Now, on the other hand, this other thing that became cute from knowing Generation Jones was the idea of keeping up with the Joneses. Is that competition part of that feeling? The competition is part of that generation that I, like everybody else in my generation, have a house and a family?
Yeah, I think that did happen. That did happen in our generation. And there was that sense, like you've mentioned, with Wall Street, as far as there's a disillusionment and there's a sense was, let me get something for myself. Let me just, so it became more narcissistic in a way.
My job in life as a Joneser is to take care of myself, take care of my family, take care of my niche. I am not part of the bigger community as much. When you went from free sexuality of the 60s and 70s to an AIDS-fearing, frightening generation which came in, you know, I mean, there it was. One day it was Plato's Retreat, and the next day it was herpes, and the evil of herpes that's going to come along and eat up all the people as they're there. And then after that, we can't get you with herpes, we'll get you with AIDS. And so what happened was the AIDS fear came slamming down on these young kids. Right now they're like in their 10 years old or 9 years old, and they're being fed the fear of sex.
Well,
do you remember this happening?
I remember it vividly because I was in my early 20s, and I remember I could not believe that there was a disease that you could get that could kill you because you had sex. It was surreal, and it was very, very frightening, and it was totally unexpected.
What about you, Catherine? Did it come on you that way as well?
Yes, it did. And I think when it started, we didn't really know the implications and the seriousness of it because it was affecting such a small community of people. And it really took a number of years for us to realize that it was spreading to other groups, and that it came to a point where nobody was really immune.
It's funny, you know, the generation before you, they didn't believe it. They said, it's just another one of those scares. Here they come and try to, the people who can't go to the party are trying to warn you why you shouldn't go to the party. You know, and here comes more fear. And they would try to scare you with AIDS, and then, not AIDS, first herpes, and then there were genital warts, and then there were all these other things that are going to kill you, and now AIDS, and now after that we'll give you something else as well. You know. But it was very specifically the shift in the sexuality that sex means. I got to watch myself. I have to be careful. I can't follow my passions. Becomes the keynote of the Joneses. Because Generation Jones is a kind of a alert, conscious. You can't imagine Obama at an orgy. You just can't. You can't, you know. He'd be saying, is this good or is this not good? He'd be trying to figure it out, and almost everybody in that generation is kind of weighing what's good and what's not good.
It's like an analytical quality that I know that I possess, and I think that that's very valid for our generation.
Yeah, and there are also people that have made it into, a moral question. Are there reasons why people are getting AIDS? Maybe it's beyond science. Maybe it's beyond disease control. Maybe it has something to do with the way people are living their lives, the standards they have for the way they go about relating to other people.
And equally, there are people who fear AIDS who are keeping themselves from any kind of success or real relationship with kind of some kind of phobic worry about it.
Yeah, there's a real
phobia. That goes
phobia.
Beyond, yeah, it goes yeah. beyond anything reasonable, you know what I mean? Where it's just like, you got to be so careful, and they got to be more careful, and you have to be more and more careful.
Seems to me maybe there's been a bit of a burnout on the fear. I'm not saying it's gone completely, but it seems that there is a sense of, it's not that bad, it can't happen to me. There are drugs now. People aren't mm-hmm. dying of AIDS as they were so quickly in the 80s. Yeah. So that's something else that's happening.
Now, in this studio, my friends, this is Armand DeMillum with Cynthia Levchenko, social worker, Mid-Island, Long Island. Whenever somebody says to me, is there a social worker out there? I say, I know one, Cynthia, because I love you. You're beautiful, and you're such a good heart.
Thank you, Armand.
And Catherine Altieri, who I've just recently known as well, but who's got a lot to offer as well. But something happened in the studio before, and I decided I had to bring it to you. And so what I'm going to do, my friends, is you're just going to have to stick along with this and see what happens. We're about to hear something that I think you're going to find very interesting, and a transformation of two adult beings into an earlier life form. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are hearing magical music, not regular music. Magical music. This is the Monkees. Probably the Monkees gave birth to the entire generation. That sounds like something Darwin would have said.
Now I'm a believer, not a trace of doubt in my mind.
All right, now here are the two of you who have never met before, and you both knew the Monkees, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in an almost intimate way. I can say that for myself, because as an 8, 9, 10-year-old, I was listening to their music, loving it, dancing to it, and developing attachments to each one of them, and imagined myself dating each one of them. And this is before I was a teenager.
Oh, yeah. It was like the first love, the love in latency.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And I agree with you. Very, very strong bond with them. I felt like, I still feel like they are just part of my life in a very big way. And I remember when the show would be coming on, I forgot which night it was, but I would just be jumping up and down, and I couldn't wait to see them. And you and I really bonded over it, too.
Yeah.
We did
yeah.
just meet,
yeah.
and, but we have this Jones or monkeys connection.
Well, because the we love not just the music, but we love the way they looked. We love the humor of the show. The TV show was very funny. You know, they had monkeys playing cards. We traded cards the way the boys traded baseball cards. It was just a real phenomenon. It was more than the music.
It was way more than music. And I have to say that my beautiful husband, about 5 years ago, found a monkeys lunchbox for me. And I am so happy to have it. And I was like a little kid when I received it.
Right, right.
And it had some playing cards,
right.
and it had a video, and
right.
that is a prized possession.
I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. It's all a pain.
Yeah. Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. Generation Jones. There's a disparity among the group of even the Joneses as to political orientation and personal history. The earliest Joneses would have been either influenced by or directly involved in the sexual revolution. They would remember the assassination of President Kennedy. Do you guys remember President Kennedy's assassination?
I do. I remember the day that he was assassinated. I was in the playground. I was 2 years old.
Two.
And my grandmother was watching me that day. She had me in the playground, and she came over to me and she said, "We have to run home because the president's just been shot." So we ran home and we watched it on TV.
I don't remember.
Well, you're a little younger.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Martin Luther King's assassination, Bobby Kennedy's assassination. So now that hits you kids, right? Now I'm in my 20s when I hear this happening. So it's like, it's devastating to me, but I'm in my 20s, you know? I mean, it's kind of, it's part of life. Oh, assassination. But as a kid, what does it do to you? Some of you even served in Vietnam or have strong memories of the conflict. You know, yet other Joneses, especially when the year of General Jones is extended out to the late 60s, Generation Jones, would have reached maturity in the 80s and have little or no memory of those events. Now, the term Joneser comes from the idea of conspicuous consumption of the 80s and the idea of keeping up with the Joneses. The older members of Generation Jones could have been the first yuppies. You remember? So we had the hippies,
yeah.
and then we had the yuppies. And the yuppies were like the college-bound, straight people.
But Armand, I thought the term Joneses came from Davy Jones and the Monkees.
No.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I vote for that.
How do you like that? Good for you. Literally thousands of articles interpreting the importance of Generation Jones in a variety of contexts. Most important is predictions. Based on Generation Jones's influence on politics, the older generation Jones members tend to be more conservative in their politics. Now, these are the people who are in their 40s and 45 and 50. They're kind of conservative, whereas the younger members have become more volatile. You know, they're becoming likely to vote for a candidate out of their political party, even if they want to change. And this is what's responsible for the election and re-election of George Bush. The Joneses elected him. Yes.
Wow. I feel bad.
No, that's who elected him.
Well, that's true.
You know, and also for the 2006 turnaround when voters successfully elected a Democratic majority Senate and House of Representatives. They were saying, you know, whatever's good for what feeds us, and what feeds us conspicuous consumption was General George Bush. And even if ethically I don't believe in what he's doing, this is what we voted for. You are the guys, the Jonesers. You're the guys who put them up there.
Well, you know, Armand, and that goes back to what I was saying before, that we're diverse. We we change. We're like chameleons. We've been through a lot. We've experienced so much. And we kind of draw on everything we've been through and everything we know. And we're not afraid to change.
That's a really good point. Very eclectic.
That's the right word.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Are you sure you're not afraid to change? Are you sure? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial, I'm with two good friends, Cynthia Levchenko, Catherine Altieri, both social workers, both who have kind of looked at this idea of Generation Jones. Now, we're going to be taking your telephone calls today at 212-209-2900. We want to hear from you and to talk about how you found it. Now, let's just talk about music for a minute. Cynthia, you really understand the musical differences. There were the Frank Sinatra generation. There was the big band generation, which I'll say is the older generation. Then there's the Frank Sinatra generation. Then there's the baby boomers, right? And then after the baby boomers come Generation Jones. Now, after that, a number of other generations, what is Generation X then? Is that different than Generation Jones?
Yeah, like I had mentioned before, we're between both of these generations. So, but Gen X is more, I would say, the way it's been presented, a little bit more negative, a little bit more disillusioned, perhaps even more out to get what you need because there's not much that was promised to them and not much that was delivered.
They're 29 to 41 years old, tend to be disillusioned, tend not to have that flexibility,
right.
Tend to get fixed. Now, Generation X, 29 to 41 year old, would that include by now a lot of the skinheads and a lot of the harder groups from that area? Remember, this came out of, we went from hippies, we went to another reaction. What would be the music of Generation X?
Well, the music of Generation X, I mean, again, it kind of flows because if you're looking from the boomers, all those rock and roll bands that had the genesis back then, through the 70s, where you had Led Zeppelin and the Stones continuing, Aerosmith coming out, heavy metal, you have sort of this meld of different types of music that have affected the Jonesers as well as the Xers.
Heavy metal was mainly something that came out of what generation?
Heavy metal, I would still consider it was part of my generation, but it flowed forth. Gen X, yes.
Now, what happens after that is we move into another kind of funny groups, subgroups. And since we're doing this, before we take our call, could you describe some of these subgroups? Like, what is a goth? G-O-T-H.
Well, I would say a goth is maybe the contemporary equivalent of, you know, like a nihilistic attitude toward life, existential. It's probably the contemporary negative artistic view of the world, and it's in their music, it's in their the way they dress, and the way
they dress is usually black.
Very dark.
Very dark clothing and very, you know, long, almost medieval clothing I've seen.
Yeah.
Right? Goth is in gothic. And didn't piercings start with the goth movement, mostly piercings?
I don't know that it started with goths, but I know that they have really taken it to an extreme.
What is the sexuality of the goth people? Is it really free for all sex, do you think? Or is it something that has its own limits and fears? It seems to be a lot about sex. It seems to be that somewhere in there, there's a kind of a depression that means nothing matters, including risk.
Yeah, there seems to be a bit depression.
Okay, now what about this, the other group that we go to, which are the, what are the groups out there? What is a crust?
A crust is someone who has, and a younger person who has really rejected the material concerns of contemporary youth, because a lot of contemporary youth are very concerned with material things, having the latest computer, the latest electronic gadget, and Acrust has kind of rejected that and rejected standards by which people traditional standards by which we judge people, the way people look, the way people smell, and they don't care about the way they look, and they don't care about the way they smell even. And they may be homeless. Sometimes they're homeless. They don't believe that that is necessarily something that should be important to them.
There's a similarity between this group and the early punk movement. I know in the early 70s when punk sort of came across the water, and it was almost like a hangover from the 60s. It was the complete opposite of all that love and peace. It was really a disenfranchised, sort of very angry genre of music.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We take our break today. I'd like to talk a little bit of drugs through the generations. You know, now there you were, the older generation, which there should be a name for the pre-baby boomers. What are they called?
Isn't that the greatest generation? Or is that before the greatest generation?
The greatest generation. The greatest generation, right? They liked alcohol a lot. They smoked a lot of cigarettes, mainly alcohol cigarettes occasionally, very rarely marijuana. Baby boomers, phew, everything.
Yeah.
Right? The kitchen sink. It was acid. It was heroin. It was marijuana. It was grass. It was whatever you could get your hands on. If it got you high and took you off the planet, it was okay. You could eat mushrooms. You could eat anything you want. Whatever took you there was fine and benign. And then something happened. Now, around the Generation Joneses, what happened with drugs?
Well, it shifted over. I mean, pot was still around, of course, but cocaine came around. And I do remember it was considered by many, many people to be safe. We were told it was non-addictive. And even just the energy of that, if you think about it, cocaine, it's speedy. It makes you more alert at the same time as
it
was changing.
And more productive. And
more productive. More productive, absolutely.
Which is what Generation Jones was about. So you could be productive. You
could
be a yuppie. You could be doing cocaine in the bathroom at work. Right? You could be doing lines. It's not going to hurt you very much.
No, enhance your performance. You're not going to be spacing out in a corner. So
make you work even longer, right?
Right, exactly.
Nothing but good, and it was very abundant. It was very easy to get to, and it was very widespread.
Huh. And so cocaine came along, and then eventually that turned not to be true because people were just strung out, which led us to the crack generation, which should have its own name, which was part of that.
Yeah.
And crack was like, crack was to getting high, like AIDS was to sex.
Yeah.
It was like suddenly, well, we there's no more choice here. You're just doing this because you're strung out on this, and this is what it is, and it's your addiction.
And it was so affordable, because originally cocaine was very expensive, and then crack came along, and it became affordable to everyone, and that was how the downfall really came, I think.
Well, because it's the extreme form of cocaine, though, it has more addictive properties.
The addictive cycle is much shorter.
It's much shorter, and it's more destructive, and the effects on the mind and the body are extremely harmful.
But what we were saying is that every generation had a need to get away. None of us had it really easy. It looks good if you go to the greatest generation. It looks pretty good. The baby boomers, if you were at the party, you were having a grand time. It was a wonderful time back then. A lot of people tell me they're sick of hearing how great the 60s and the 70s were. But there were a lot of rewards. But all the time, people found a need to distance themselves from reality and whatever reality was. We're going to take a short break, my friends, and when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls at 212-209-2900, but not before we play you some very special music. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with you in a couple of seconds. Led Zeppelin, my friends.
And it makes me wonder.
As I watch here, it was Cynthia Levchenko with us, going into her own heaven as she listens. It does touch you, huh, Cynthia?
It touches me very, very deeply. That song is truly the anthem of my generation, and I can't say enough about the influence that this music has had on me. And I want to say to Robert Plant, if he is listening...
Today's his birthday.
Today is his birthday, the lead singer of Led Zeppelin and a wonderful artist on his own. Happy birthday, Robert.
All right. Happy birthday, Robert. This is Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. Today we're talking about the Jones, the Generation Jones, this little spot in the middle, and how the difference between the generations should be taken more into consideration, because it really was different languages. More than different clothing and different styles, it was really different attitudes, different feelings. I remember a book called Einstein's Dreams. Did you ever read that, Cynthia?
No, I didn't.
Wonderful book, a small book about written by a man, not by Einstein, where he took Einstein's theory of relativity and time, and he said, if we saw time differently, how would it be? One of the questions we asked, for example, he said, imagine if you were a mosquito. He said, most mosquitoes are born, and they live 24 hours. Some, he says, are born in the middle of the night. So their first 12 hours of their light, of their night lives are in darkness. And then their end of their life is in brightness. How does that compare to somebody who's born into brightness and whose life ends in darkness? Just a concept. And in all of the stories of Einstein's dreams, he says he asks your mind to move around a little bit. Try to see, what's the consideration like? What's it like to live on top of a mountain rather than the bottom of a mountain? What's the difference? Because that usually determines social status. So this is a really fascinating book, and I think one of the things that you bring to us when you talk about your work with the generational gaps is it says, you know, it's a whole different world out there. You can't judge it by the old standards. 212-209-2900 is our number. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Welcome back.
Yeah, hi. My name is Jonathan Sequeira.
Hello, Jonathan.
Listen, I'd like to disagree with a number of things that you said and give you a perspective of my views, because I come from a unique perspective. I go back in the 60s and the 50s. I'm a hippie from the 60s. If it wasn't for my father, there'd be no FM. He invented hi-fi and, FM and the whole bit. And I look at it differently. I look at it like in the 60s, everything was real. You didn't have to worry about using your condom sense. The drugs were real. The food was real. One day's pay would cover my whole month's rent. When I was 15, I had a studio. One day's pay, cover a whole month's rent. Now everything's artificial. We're living in the artificialism. You know, scamism, artificialism. You think you elect a president. The president is not elected. He's chosen, okay? Obama's basically a puppet for the imperial government. And it's criminal. To me, it's criminal. I mean, I remember
Jonathan, rather than using this program as a one to make a political statement, which is what you're doing, what we do on The Positive Mind is we kind of ask people about what they feel more than just what they think. Now, you said something very important to me. Your father is somebody who created FM. Your father is somebody who you were very close to. And you had a close relationship to him. I could tell you loved him.
So my father is a person, he's a genius. He was designing stuff at 3 years old in electronics, but he's not a good father.
What's wrong with him as a father?
Well, he's basically a person whose everything is on a business level, and he's too far above most people in their in intellect.
So you've never really been hugged by your father?
Oh, no, never.
Yeah, now what is that? You know, you talk about generational gaps. We talk about the generational gap between you, because, you know, the average son gets hugged by their father.
Never, ever would ever hug you. Kiss you, hug you, nothing.
Well, let me ask you something. Since then, as you've grown up, have you found good friends?
No,
because you don't really trust people, do you?
No.
Yeah, and that's what I hear. So what we're really talking about is not so much a generational gap as the gap that happens when a young man like you, Jonathan, a beautiful guy, doesn't get the kind of nurturance he needs. He can see it, but you don't get it. And the only way you could grow up after that is to not trust anything or anybody, and you become a malcontent. Not that there isn't something to be upset about.
Well,
but
I
that
mean,
becomes
I look at it differently,
the focus.
Armin. I look at it like when I was growing up in the 60s, at least everything was real and everything.
But your love with your father wasn't real.
Well, that was that. You know, that's two different issues here.
But it isn't. It's one. It's you're a kid. You're a kid, Jonathan.
Well,
Jonathan,
I mean,
let
look,
me
you gotta realize I was using drugs at 9 years old. Okay.
Of course, and why wouldn't you?
You know, I in fact, I was using drugs at 3 years old because I was a candy junkie.
Yeah.
I was a sugar junkie at three. I was used to steal to get my.
Because nobody had love to give you, they had to give you candy.
So.
Yeah, hey, Jonathan, let me ask you something though. Yeah. You know, there's something else I hear in your voice. You like this radio program, don't you?
Well, I like the I like the station because the station is the only station on the air that speaks the truth.
Yeah.
And I feel it's getting diluted by certain things that might be said, and that gets me upset because to me I know, you know, I might not be well read because I don't like reading and this and that and dyslexic and ADHD, but I know the truth.
Jonathan, you sound like an intelligent man to me, and across these airwaves, I send you the hug that you should have always
okay,
gotten.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Yes, I mean, my respects for any political statement that anybody wants to make, but we're not a political forum. What we're about is about the human psyche. When you read the description of the positive mind, it says it's a program that fuses feelings and facts. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Harold. I was born in 1955. And
hi, Harold. You're one of them.
Yeah, well, I was listening to your conversation, and I don't know the ethnicity of yourself or your guest, but I'm an African-American male, and
uh-huh.
Growing up in that era, I Temptations, Motown, I caught the tail end of doo-wop, so I was a pretty well-rounded young man. But my biggest fear is that at that age, the day Kennedy was killed, I'll never forget it. It was Friday, November 21st, I believe it was around 12:30, 1 o'clock in New York, it was 12 o'clock in Dallas. And I'll never forget that because from that day on, it changed my whole way of thinking about how this country operates.
I'll never forget that day. What's your name?
First name is Harold, sir.
Harold, call me Armand, okay? Hey, Harold, you know, you're saying something very important because that's what happened in that generation. You kids back then were whacked in the head by assassinations, by just kind of, it was like too hard to believe, too much to gather, and it changed your whole life.
Well, you factor that in, Armand, with the fact that I was an African-American male. Malcolm was killed in 65. Martin
right.
was killed in 67. Kennedy was killed in 67, and they were trying to send me to Vietnam. And I'm looking at protests and riots and Bull Connor and all this other nonsense, the racism of this country, and they were trying to send me at a tender age to Vietnam to fight for the Vietnamese freedom, and I didn't have freedom in America. I'm surprised I'm as grounded as I am today, and I thank my mother for that. God bless her, because she made me the man I am today. I had a
How
good
did
parent.
She do that? What did she give you? She gave you?
She gave me tough love. When it was time to get whacked, you got hit. But she made me, she I, my whole objective in life was to graduate from high school, get a decent job to make my mother proud of me because she put a lot into me.
Wow.
We were dirt poor in New York City. I was on welfare. I remember putting cardboard in my sneakers because I didn't have shoes. But guess what? She made me say to myself, I'm going to make it to make her proud of me.
Harold, did mom die?
My mom passed away 20 years ago from cancer.
Wow, I'm sorry.
Very, much too young. But the bottom line is...
Harold, stop. If mom was somewhere in the ethers right now, where she could be somewhere getting the effect of listening to the station, tell me the one thing you'd like to say to her directly.
Basically, I love her and I miss her. I would like to hug
her
one time.
Tell her that. Tell her. Just say the words to her, not just about her. Say.
Well, I say it every day, and it's a pleasure
it
listening to your radio.
Say it out loud. Because
I love you, Mom, and I miss you, and I wish I could hug you one more time.
Wow.
But it's a pleasure listening to your radio show. And one other thing before I go, sir. Your conversation seems to center around people that aren't of people that are not of color. There's a lot of black folks and Spanish folks in this country that suffered right along with the Caucasians during this period, whether we're hippies, yuppies, or whatever you want to call it. But I grew up in, like, again, I grew up on Motown, Temptations. I caught a tail end of the psychedelic thing with the drugs and LSD. I saw all that around me. But again, I made sure I did what my mother asked me to do, which make her proud of me and become a young man.
Thank you very much for calling in. Thank you, my child.
Proud of me and become a young man.
212-209-2900. I grew up in a mixed culture. I grew up in an African-American culture myself. Started off in the Italian culture and then quickly moved to that. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. Good to hear your voice.
Nice. I'm glad I'm back. Who is this?
This is Anthony, and I'm born and raised in New York. And I was born in 1965.
You're right in there.
My mom, if you go to looking at Woodstock, you see her dancing away in there.
Your mom was one of the people dancing and looking at Woodstock.
Yeah, I stumbled upon the picture, and it was, by the way, my mom passed on, and she died in my arms about 2-3 years ago.
Wow.
And I had my time with her. And, you know, I experienced when I was growing up all the stuff that hippies would do. and my sense of a hippie was just a really down-to-earth human being.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who could connect with the hemispheres of all living things and non-living things. everything had a soul. Everything had an aura. It was beauty and love all around me when I was growing up. And yes, there was turmoil, but it wasn't around drugs. There were drugs, but you know, my mom introduced me to marijuana when I was 12. I don't smoke. I don't.
So what
marijuana.
Would you say? Do you think that, I mean, you're saying the influence of the love in the form of your mom is what made a huge difference in your life, that the generational gap and the generational difficulty and being part of the Jones generation was less significant than having the closeness of a mother really loving you. That was more significant in your life.
I think that the guidance that my mother gave me, seeing that she was a single parent, was the key factor in grounding me. But not only her love, but her wisdom and her mother's wisdom that she was, I was inculcated with, it gave me a way of twisting, or let's say being able to manipulate my understandings about what is, generally speaking. I was able to look at things from all perspectives, meaning the people in power, the people who are subjugated to the power, the people in the gray areas, you know, talking about wavelength zero and then going into the political aspects and how they are able to get all the algorithms of all the different behavior patterns of all the different facets of humanity. You know, these things were given to me through my mother too, and I love her for that because I found those tools to be what I was able to go on into life and use.
Well, Anthony, I hope a lot of parents are listening who can take what you're saying and pass it on to their children as well. You're a beautiful man. Thank you for calling in.
I'd just like to say on the air, Mom, I love you, and you have a heart of gold.
Okay, Mom, I hope you're listening. 212-209-2900. Interesting today. You know, we come back after a month of not taking our callers, and we get these beautiful, beautiful men calling in, giving homage to their past, talking the truth. That's what I love about this station. That's what I love about our program. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Armand Demilier on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
This is Bob from calling from Long Island.
Oh, how are you, Bob?
I'm good. I want to applaud you on a fantastic show. I love your guests.
I turned on
the show today with I'm a Believer being played.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something, Bob?
And I got that visceral gush that kind of established myself again. I remembered who I was.
Yeah.
I grew up in 1955. This has been a marvelous show. The psycho history kind of stuff. I love it. I grew up in late 55, and so I survived with Beatles, Monkees, Zeppelin, and then punk. And then it was a great place to be. It was a great vantage point in which to view all the different changes that happened. The assassinations. You remember, old enough to remember where I was, you know, conscious of all these things. I didn't have parents, though, really. So to navigate the end of the 50s through the 60s, that incredible mind-altering transitional phase that we all went through, not having parents made it very difficult for me to know who I was, you know. Perhaps over-identifying with, like, you know, cultural pop icons in order to survive.
Well, you know, you bring up an important point, because during that generation, a lot of people separated from their parents, and they went into much more of an independence, and there was a gathering of that independence. You know, I kind of really appreciate that, even though I know that wasn't the reason that you separated from them.
Well, actually, Norman, it was very confusing to me, because growing up in the beginning of the anti-establishment age, it seemed to be the status quo to hate your parents and to rebel against it. And so I already hated my parents and didn't trust them. So it kind of established that I was doing something that was, my reasons for doing it were different than the reasons that were kind of culturally imposed. But it kind of really mixed me up even further, because I was still bonded to them emotionally.
Well, it sounds like you found your own voice, Bob. I really appreciate that.
It was the guest that brought it out in me. Sometimes one of your shows sometimes is so good that I just want to be there in the studio with you having coffee and talking. It was great.
Well, maybe we have to do that one day.
Okay.
You know, I would welcome you in here anytime.
I'd love to hang out.
You give a call and you're welcome to sit in on a program one day.
Are you serious?
I'm absolutely serious.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I get stage fright just talking on the phone.
Well, you don't have to talk on the radio. You can just sit here and watch what we do.
Really?
Sure.
I'm going to take you up on that.
Bob, you're welcome.
Okay.
I look forward to it.
Great. That's great. Okay. Bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. Cynthia, thanks for being a part of this. Obviously, it touched people.
Oh, I'm very, very happy to have been here. And these callers were just beautiful. They touched my heart very much. Thank you.
Cynthia Levchenko, if you want to contact her, get in touch with me. I'll put you in touch with her. This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. Back on WBAI, you can go to my website, thepositivemind.com, and download this program for another time. Good luck to all of you, and once again, happy birthday to...
Happy birthday, Robert.
The WBAI Local Station Board is soliciting applications from listeners and staff for the Management Search Committee, which has been formed to locate a permanent general manager and a permanent program director. 3 listener representatives and 3 staff representatives who are not members of the LSB will be elected by the LSB to this committee. To get an application form, go to WBAI.org. Look under the section for the local station board. Applications must be received, not postmarked, received by Monday, September 7th. Either email the form to WBAI-LSB-Public-Owner@yahoogroups.com or mail it to WBAI Local Station Board, Box 11, Attention LSB Chair, 120 Wall Street, 10th Floor, New York, New York, 10005. Thank you.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
If this were 5 o'clock on a Thursday, that music would mark the beginning of Behind the News. But it's not, so instead I'm here to invite you to join me, Doug Henwood, as I comment on the economic news and interview a wide variety of guests, authors, activists, think tankers, and even the occasional Nobel Prize winner. Economics and politics from New York City to the world, what's happening and what it all means. Behind the News with Doug Henwood, Thursdays from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on WBAI.
Playing the music of Rashid Ali and Les Paul throughout the day, giving them a tribute that should have been done earlier this week, but, you know, we was in fundraiser, so we had our priorities. And once again, speaking of priorities, thank you to all those listeners out there who have stepped up and make sure that listener-sponsored media, independent media, continues to prosper here in the New York airwaves here. Thank you very much. We'll try to do our job as you did your job. So, the previous program was The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. It is heard Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 1 p.m. here on WBAI. Coming up next is Perspectives with Luis Reyes Rivera, followed by Talkback with Hugh Hamilton, and Behind the News with Doug Henwood at 5 p.m. Once again, all heard on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, broadcasting throughout the tri-state area, streaming live at WBAI.org, listener-sponsored community radio since 1960. And by the way, the name of this piece is called Mo, and this is from Rashid Ali, and this is like the second to last album that he did. So for those people that are calling up about that, because I'm pretty sure that you are, it is slowly creeping up to 2 p.m., which means Perspectives is coming up shortly. So stay tuned.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.